The shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Cooking Like a Pro. This is Chef Cal and my wife Krista.
Hello, good evening.
Yep, you found us at KCNR 1460 AM and 96.5 FM. And then, of course, if you'd like to call in and ask a cooking question, you're always welcome. Number here is 350-605-4567. Again, 350-605-4567. Or you can actually type that in. You can type a question in to cookinglikeapropodcast.net, and you can reach us that way. But we appreciate you taking time on your, whether you're driving home here or whether you're out and about. We always appreciate you listening, because we know it's a food thing. So we just, you know, enjoy talking about food. And as we normally do, we start the section off, our show off, with talking about fruits and vegetables, something you know, stuff that's good for you. You know, one of the things we haven't talked about yet is what the French call crudité, and what in America we just call vegetable tray. I guess it kind of rhyme.
Just a veggie plate.
Veggie plate.
Like those things you get at Costco that's got the multiple veggies with the dip in the middle of it?
Yeah, with, you know, the celery and the carrots and all that. And anyway, it's just a great way to get your vegetables in. I know that a lot of people may not have a wide variety of ways of preparing them or cooking them, rather than, you know, this way they can just have them sitting there.
Now, should a crudité be blanched at times, or should it always just be raw vegetables?
Well, crudité itself means raw.
Okay.
Actually means raw things. So, you know, I think that could, you can kind of do whatever you want. I think if you start adding stuff to it, I mean, it might eventually get, if you're doing meats and cheese or something, you know, and bread, then you're leaning towards a charcuterie. But for, crudité is just raw vegetables and some kind of a dip. You know, kind of the traditional dip is kind of like a ranch thing. But, we used to have a crudité that people could, well, the great thing about it is it's great for sharing. It's easy to do. It's great for sharing. It's not going to go bad. And, but you know, you do need to peel your celery. Well, that's one of those things people just miss. You got to peel your celery. And it's easy enough to do. The back of the celery, the rib itself has,
strings
on the outside. Yeah, it has strings. I mean, you can floss, I guess.
It's really stringy, really tough stuff.
Yeah, so you need to pull that out. And you need to pull it out if you're using it for something else, too. Because, I mean, that stringiness, that's those strings, that fiber is only going to get in whatever it is you cook. If it ends up coming off or getting, you know, torn off, I don't know that it necessarily would, but you know,
well, I'm talking about celery. You want a younger celery, right? Because older, woodier celery just becomes bitter and not palatable.
Yeah, it becomes bitter, and it also becomes bitter when you cook it too long. Celery is one of those things that even when we're making, you know, stocks and soups, for example, a carrot. Let's say you're doing a vegetable soup, and you've got carrots and onion and celery going in there. Well, the carrots are by far the most dense. It's going to take the longest. So maybe you start off with some carrots and some garlic and a little bit of oil, and you cook that up, and then you add maybe some chicken pieces and get that cooking. And then go ahead and add your onions, and then you can wait, you know, to add your celery. Because, again, celery might take, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, where, you know, diced up carrots, depending on the size, could take anywhere between, you know, I don't know, 8 to 10 to more. But you know, one thing about when you're cutting your vegetables, and then I know where we got off on soup here, but it is important that everything's cut the same size.
I was just going to ask you about that, because you get those big old pieces where they'll take a whole piece, because celery is tapered at the top, it's wider at the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And I know some of the vegetable trays, they'll have just a big old hunk of celery, you know, the full curb. It's not even cut down, and it's very hard to eat.
Well, hard to eat, and it's going to get more bitter. As far as cutting in the right similar sizing, extremely important because, you know, when I take a bite of soup, if I'm eating clam chowder, for example, I don't want to take a bite of soup and the only thing on my spoon is a potato. Because, you know, the potato is maybe an inch by an inch and a half or something. So you think about cutting things the right size. But crudité is really just going to be finger size, you know. I mean, if you were to look at your pointer finger, your index finger, I suppose, just something like that, like a stick, like a matchstick, something you can pick up. But then again, it's healthy. And we used to do ours with that raspberry dressing, a great raspberry. It was a salad dressing that we do. With beef, blue cheese, and pine nut salad. That was a good one. But, you know, just anything to dip it in, something a little, I mean, yogurt is a great accompaniment. You can get so many different flavored yogurts, and then you can also use yogurt as a base.
And hummus. Hummus is a good dip.
Hummus is something that's good to dip it in. So, you know, all these things are falling into the, you know, the healthier category. So it's basically just a different way of eating vegetables, because, you know, some people are like, well, how do I cook them? Well, we cook them all the same. We steam them, and or we saute them, or we microwave them. But there are a wide variety of ways of cooking vegetables, too. You know, I know that in the wintertime, carrots will generally get a little more bitter from being in the ground longer. And I just saute mine, and then when we talk about deglazing, adding the liquid to it, we would do ours and end up, like hitting them with a little bit of 7-Up. You know, so it's a little 7-Up in with your carrots and adds a little sweetness back to it.
Now I'm curious, so a vegetable plate usually has carrots, celery, a lot of times broccoli, sometimes cauliflower.
Uh-huh.
Are there some other vegetables? I mean, when I was growing up, we used to do a lot of Jerusalem artichokes.
Yeah. You know, just about anything. Like you said, Jerusalem artichokes, which reminds me of things like turnip or rutabaga. There's any variety of things that you can put on there. And you mentioned earlier, or you asked about just whether they should be blanched or not. And that kind of just depends on the person. I mean, some things like broccoli, cauliflower, you know, cauliflower maybe not so much, but even if you blanched it for 60 seconds, it, you know, it's still going to be crunchy. It's still going to have all the vitamins and minerals in it. We're not trying to, you know, squeeze all the flavor out of it. But, you know, broccoli can be a little more trying, you know, to chew through.
You know. Okay, now I have another beef.
Another beef. We're talking about vegetables.
I know. Okay. Cherry tomatoes. You know those cherry tomatoes? They'll give you the big old one that you pop in your mouth and you bite on it. And because it's not cut, it goes squirt everywhere.
And, yeah, and those are great. Yeah. Well, that's something that I always used to bother me in restaurants. So I made sure if we were ever using cherry tomatoes as
on a
garnish,
salad.
Yeah, as a salad, we would cut them in half. Because, you know, hitting the person across this table from you is not the goal. Eating a cherry tomato, but I picked some of those sunbursts today.
Mm-hmm.
I was outside and I was hungry, so I grabbed a couple of those.
People, my tomatoes are finally ripening.
They are getting close.
It's September.
The ones the deer haven't got are ripening. You know, it's still deer season, so we live outside the city limits. We might need to give Dad a call. But
besides tomatoes, are they called goji? No, not goji berries. Those little pineapple husk.
There's a variety of names for them. Some of them call them stone fruit. I always called them pineapple husk tomatoes because, for one, they have that husk on them, kind of like a Chinese lantern. Another name they're known by is gooseberry.
Gooseberries, that's it.
But the pineapple husk tomatoes or gooseberries ground cherries.
Ground cherries.
The thing about them is they just taste like pineapple. They're so delicious if you can get them. If you see them, in the store, a little basket of them.
Trader Joe's almost always has them.
Okay. I'm wondering if we had to hit up Trader Joe's on some kind of a, you know, commercial contract as much as you bring them up. But, well, you shop there more than I do. I go there for my pork belly, but that's generally, I mean, not my pork belly. I go there to buy pork belly.
Well, they have some unique things that you can't get in other stores, and that's why I like to go there to see what's new and what we can try from other cultures.
And they have less things that are wrapped in plastic, right? We've been talking about that lately, you know, things that are wrapped in plastic. So, but we're going to go ahead and take our quick first break here. Again, Cooking Like a Pro, you're with Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista, and you have found us on KNCR. KCNR, 1460 AM and 96.5 FM.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Experience fall family fun at this year's Turtle Bay Oktoberfest, happening Saturday, October 12th from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. right here at Paul Bunyan's Forest Camp. Enjoy local breweries, food, live music, animals, games, and more. Oktoberfest-themed costumes are encouraged. Each ticket includes your first beer or root beer for the kids. Presented by Liquor Barn and Sasquatch Car Wash. So join us Saturday, October 12th from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. for Turtle Bay's Oktoberfest. Grab tickets today at turtlebay.org.
It's fall, y'all, and that means pumpkin flavors are here. Get on over to Black Bear Diner and get your fill of everyone's favorite sweet cream pancakes, drizzled with pumpkin pie sauce and topped with whipped cream and maple syrup. Visit Black Bear Diner at 2605 Hilltop Drive or order online at blackbeardiner.com.
Black Bear Diner.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
It's time again for the Majestic Stillwater Powwow, October 4th through 6th, at the Reading Rodeo Grounds, with free admission for all ages. See the return of the beautiful dancers, the feel of the powerful drummers. Learn and experience firsthand the culture of the Native American people. Proudly brought to you by the Reading Rancheria and Wind River Resort and Casino. The Stillwater Powwow, October 4th through 6th, at the Reading Rodeo Grounds. For information, call 530-225-8979 or visit stillwaterpowwow.com. Brought to you by the Potter family, this station, and other proud sponsors.
I like it smoked and I like it fried. I like it with eggs on the side. My love for bacon will never die. I want bacon, bacon, bacon. It's great for breakfast.
Bacon, bacon, bacon. You have found us here on KCNR, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM. And again, that phone number, 530-605-4567. And bacon, you know, actually I was reading something that our son wrote the other day. He's 15 now, but I was looking at something that he had written back in his
grade school days,
and he said it was something to do with God creating bacon. You know, I mean, and he's a bacon kid.
He loves bacon,
and you know, especially his Grammy bacon, because when he goes to Grammy's house, Grammy gives him the big thick bacon.
Yeah. Good bacon.
There's a difference. Yeah. And I know that, you know, I worked for a couple years at Black Bear Diner as their corporate chef, and bacon was a big thing. Bacon's one of those things that it's pieces per pound. So there's 16 ounces in a pound. So if you get a pound of bacon, then it should be six, you know, 1 ounce per piece. If it's a 16 count, 16 ounces in a pound. One of the things that I've seen where the bacon industry really trying to kind of trip us up here is that, remember, you would buy bacon and you would get a 1 pound of bacon. When you go to the store, grab me a pound of bacon. Well, when you grab that box, that you are just assuming more often than not that it's a pound of bacon. It's not. Look at it. Because quite often, and it will say 12 ounces. So it's only 3/4 of a pound. So they're saying that, oh, this bacon, pack of bacon is only costing you X. Maybe it's costing you $8 or something, but you're not getting a full pound of bacon.
The packages are getting smaller. The prices are going up.
Yeah, I mean, there's less Doritos in a bag. I mean, less Cheerios in a box. It's, I don't know.
Is it half full or is it half empty? Well, half full of air.
Well, it's these marketing people, you know. I think we have to blame it on the marketing people that are out there trying to say, okay, well, how are we going to save money on this? But, yes, check your bacon and make sure that you are getting a pound. I would recommend going to a place where they sell bacon by the pound. A lot of places do. It's generally at what we call a 10 to 12. So it's 10 to 12 count. So it's a little over an ounce per piece, and, you know, 50% of it's fat. It's going to cook off. It's going to shrink. I like bacon that you can chew. I don't
even bother buying uncooked bacon anymore. I get the Kirkland.
Yeah. Well, you're again, back to Costco.
Yes.
Back to Costco.
Yes. Costco is my friend. Yeah. Trader Joe's is my friend.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we started talking about bacon because wanted to talk about we'll figure out a way to make this connection here, but enjoying flavors more and looking for a balance of flavor. And I thought one of the easier ways to kind of describe my thoughts on this were a BLT. If you eat bacon, you're undoubtedly had, you know, a BLT, a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich. But when you take a bite of that bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich, are you tasting just the bacon? Are you tasting the tomato? And are you tasting the lettuce? Are you tasting the bread? So basically what we're looking at is when we prepare a meal, we want the flavors to be balanced enough where we taste all of them. Because if you don't, then what's the reason for that ingredient even being in there? You know, I mean, if I eat something and I can't taste the mushrooms, then why are the mushrooms in there? So you kind of have to look at that balance, like, do you need to go more, a little more of this, a little less of this? But on a BLT especially, it's pretty easy to really just taste the bacon.
Unless you've got a really nice homegrown tomato. That makes a huge
difference.
Okay,
well, that leads me to the next thing. Nice segue. And I remember when the tomato season first came out and Mom and Dad had their garden out back this year. It wasn't that long ago, maybe a month or so ago. And they had this tomato, and they were letting it grow. They were picking things around it, but not this one tomato. And I said, what are you doing with that one tomato? And Dad goes, that's my BLT tomato.
Oh.
That's my BLT tomato for me and Mom for their sandwich. So they literally just were
grew
waiting.
One tomato for
yeah,
us.
They were waiting on it. Well, they had a lot of different tomatoes, but this one particular nice large tomato. And I know that we got a mortgage lifter or something the other day.
A couple beefsteaks growing out there.
A couple beefsteaks. And it was, you know, you get the slice. In fact, I think I picked up a heirloom, but you put a slice, maybe like a little over a quarter, maybe 3/8 of an inch thick. Slice of tomato on there, a little salt and pepper, a little bit of bacon, not over, and then a nice crisp lettuce, a nice crisp lettuce. You got a great BLT. Great BLT. And moving on to something else that we just did was dinner last night. And that was stroganoff, something that, you know, you don't see it on a restaurant menu. Just don't.
It seems like it's a pastime type of food. People don't eat it anymore.
Yeah, it's just, brunch is kind of a dead thing, right? I mean, I remember brunch being so fun. I remember back in the late 70s, me and my friend Howard, man, we would set brunch line up at the Red Line, and we would have all kinds of heights and tables and rocks and bushes, and I always did the ice carvings, and then we just set up the chafing dishes, and we would have, you know, you'd have all the eggs Benedict and the beef stroganoff and the seafood Newburgh, and you had all those, but the just, you know, I don't even know there's a place that really does a plate down brunch.
The place up by the Shasta Lake, I think, still doing it.
Oh, the old, I don't know if they still call that Tail of the Whale. I worked there in
Bridge Bay. Yeah, Bridge. Yeah. I can't remember what it's called now.
I was working there with my second son. My second son, Joshua, was born while I worked there. So CJ was just a year old. So that was back in the mid 80s. That'll give you an idea of how old I am. But stroganoff, actually, doing a little research on that. It came from a Russian gentleman, Count Stroganoff. Spelled Stroganov, Stroganoff. He was from a Russian family, and this is attributed to his chef. This is back in the 1800s, and it said that the count had no teeth. So he needed something soft. So you cook stroganoff all the way to the point where, you know, it kind of falls apart, which of course you can. I mean, it's like shredded beef then. Personally, I think, I like a little chew. I don't mind. I mean, I don't mind biting something and chewing something. That's kind of like pasta being al dente.
Although, the one you made the other night, so we had a ribeye. Is that what you brought home, a ribeye?
Yeah.
I think, Monday.
Yeah.
And then leftover, you cubed that up, and then you add it to the brown sauce, and it was the most tender ribeye I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, tender and delicious, but not shredded.
No, it was not
shredded.
You
know, if you're going to shred something, you might as well just get the least expensive meat you can, because that's kind of what it's there for. It's a working muscle, so it's a part of the animal that's, you know, does some moving around, maybe in the shoulder where you get your chuck, or towards the butt end, you know, or you get your sirloin and your round, you know, where the meat forms, you know, the muscle fibers are held together by connective tissue. So once you get more connective tissue involved, because it's more of a working muscle, then you have something where the cooking process needs to break it down. So then you're stewing it. Then you're throwing it in the crock pot. Then you're simmering it on the back of the stove and just letting it do its thing. But I wasn't going to cook the ribeye that was left over. All you had to do is kind of throw it in there and bring it up to temp. But a lot of mushrooms.
So a stroganoff, it comes from a brown sauce.
It's a sour cream sauce. So it's a brown sauce with sour cream.
And mushrooms.
And mushrooms are something that we've always done here. That's how I was trained, taught to do back in the 70s. And that's traditional. But, you know, you can certainly obviously do it without. You could add other things as well. Again, that's a wonderful thing about food, is that it's just fun and exciting and, you know, to do things with it. But you add the sour cream, and sometimes you're actually better off putting a dollop being let's just say a scoop. If you don't know what a dollop is, it's just a scoop, a little plop of sour cream on top. So you got your noodles or your pasta, you got your beef stroganoff with your brown sauce with your, you know, mushrooms if you're going to have, and then you have to throw the sour cream on top. But traditionally what they did was they mixed the sour cream in with the beef. And the way you do that, you just have to do a little bit of time. And you have to whisk it continuously until it's completely whipped in, because you're adding dairy to, you know, a simmering sauce, which if it's simmering, then it's, you know, a little bit over 200 degrees, and then you're going to have a problem with it.
Now, I actually grew up, we didn't make true stroganoff. There was, you know, those Lipton sauce packets. It's the sauce with the noodles in it, and you add the, so there was a stroganoff version of it. I don't think they're called Lipton anymore, but you would have the meat and the sour cream, but then we put in a little bit of canned tomatoes with it, adding the acid to it. So it was a knockoff stroganoff, and I love, that's what I grew up with.
But you can add anything to it. And again, it's just the thing with the whipped cream is, not the whipped cream, the sour cream is, you don't want to curdle because it's dairy. So if you add it too early, then there's a chance of it curling. But again, a little bit of time, whisk it in, a little bit of time, whisk it in. Most of the time when you're adding ingredients, especially if you're making emulsions, you know, where you're, you know, have egg yolks going, where you're adding oil to it, you really want to go just a little bit at a time.
It incorporates.
Well, let it get incorporated and mixed before you just add, you know, half the volume in whatever you're making. If you're making, you know, meringue, and all of a sudden, you know, you're throwing a pound of granulated sugar. Well, maybe the whites can't handle that. Or if you're making a hollandaise, maybe you can't handle, you know, an entire cup of butter at the same time. Or if you're doing dairy, same thing with using dairy with soups. You know, you gotta be a little bit careful if you're making a, you know, maybe like a cream of butternut squash. I know that there's a butternut squash and ginger soup that I really enjoy, that it's a good soup too.
Now, as far as the garnish back on the stroganoff, you put some green onion tops on them. Is it traditional to have an herb like a parsley or a green onion or something on top?
Yeah, I think traditionally from the French standpoint is parsley. They, you know, they do use a lot of parsley on everything. You don't see parsley on anything now. Really, I don't. I just, you know, you might once in a while see some chopped up and put on something.
Well, most of the herb blends from France had parsley in them in some way.
Parsley is a huge ingredient, and so is its flavor. And originally it was just used as a, you know, something that you would eat your meal and then you take your parsley sprig and you need it and you
breath freshener.
Literally, yeah, just to something to freshen your breath up so you didn't walk around smelling like, you know, salmon for the rest
garlic
of the day.
Garlic onions.
There you go. So, but stroganoff, there you go. It's a great dish, very traditional, good stewy dish. I know as we're going to, at some point here, the weather's going to get cooler and you're going to be looking for those things. So, gets me good, helpful information there. And, it's Chef Cal. We're going to take a quick break. Cooking Like a Pro, you have found us. KCNR, 1460 AM.
Oh, this is the night. It's a beautiful night. And we call it a Mellanorte. Look at the skies. They have stars in their eyes. On this lovely Mellanorte.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Reading, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson. And find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender.
This is Steve Clark, owner of Minuteman Press. You know us for doing things like business cards, booklets, and direct mail, but we do something else you may not know about. If you are missing a person or a pet, we want to help reunite you with your loved one by offering free colored flyers. Just call Minuteman Press at 221-0400. We are so grateful for the support of this community, and we are happy to be able to give back. So again, if you are missing a person or a pet, please call Minuteman Press for some free flyers. 221-0400. That's 221-0400, Minuteman Press.
The Shasta College Physical Therapist Assistant PTA program application period is now open. Applications will be accepted through Friday, September 27th at 4 p.m. The top 24 qualified applicants will be invited to join the Spring 2025 PTA cohort. Interested in learning more about the PTA program? Contact our Health Services Division office at 530-339-3661 or visit our website, shastacollege.edu.
For the Young Eagles Rally at Benton Field. Young people can get free airplane flights on Saturday, September 28th between 8:30 and noon. Local volunteer pilots will take young people ages 8 to 17 for flights. Meet at the EAA Quonset Hut, 2955 South Street, just off Platts. Parents or legal guardian must fill out the registration. Pre-registration is required at yeda.org. Sign up today at yedaY.org.
Les poissons, hé hé hé, ha ha ha, we see cleaver, I have them in two. I pull out what's inside and I serve it. I've got a love for fishes, don't you?
Welcome back again. Here is Chef Cal and my beautiful wife, Miss Chef Krista, and we are talking about food. You have found us on Cooking Like a Pro. So thanks for joining us. I wanted to say thank you to David, who texted me and said that, okay, so it's not called Tale of the Whale out of Bridge Bay, which it was when I was there back in the 80s. And that was in the 19th century, hon. Yeah. And, but it's called Huff's, H-U-F-F-S.
Oh, that's so, right. It's actually named after somebody.
Yeah. There's a story there. So go on up and get the story. I know they did brunch because we went there for brunch, a number of months ago.
For your son's birthday.
But it's such a beautiful, beautiful view. You know, right there on the lake.
Especially when the lake is full.
Well, I think we're doing okay. It always kind of refills itself. But one of the things I wanted to chat about in this segment here was a restaurant that I really enjoyed. Well, I believe it was one of my favorite restaurants that we opened up. And it was called Pesce e Pasta. Pesce, Italian for fish. E, the letter E, means end. And then, of course, pasta. So it was fish and pasta. So it was kind of nice because just to be able to have that variance of being able to mix these things together where you take a seafood item and a pasta item and you can really come up with a dish that's much more effective. If you're making seafood fettuccine, and you got the pasta or maybe a seafood risotto. We talked about last week a little bit. It's a great combination.
Well, it's traditional in Italy and the Mediterranean to have fish because they're right on the water, and you can have those flavors.
Yes, the Italians do, and but we had a lot of stuff on the pesce pasta menu that I really enjoyed. Deep fried lasagna, very weird. I wouldn't do that ever again. I mean, not weird so much. It was just a 3-day process to make it and cut it, make it, bake it, cut it, freeze it, bread it, fry it, roast it. I mean, it was a great dish.
I hope you charged a lot of money for it.
It was a lot of work.
It was a lot of fun. So we had a good, we couldn't find a menu. And you think, I've opened about a dozen restaurants, only four that we've owned. But for some reason, the menu just never got, I don't know if that was back before computers. That was when we still had D Mercurio's, our flagship restaurant that we started off with back in.
And this was before my time. I never got to go there. Yeah, I never went to that restaurant.
And a lot of people say that was their favorite restaurant that we did.
But Mom called, and what did she find?
Yeah, Mom found the menu. Yep. Thanks, Mother. Mo, good job. We found the menu for me. So I was looking through there because I want to, add these things to the cookbook we're working on. And a couple of things that kind of stuck out to me was the crab manicotti. And a lot of people have manicotti and they confuse between the difference between manicotti and cannelloni. A cannelloni is rolled up in a crepe. Generally, a cannelloni, like if you had seafood crepes, it'd be rolled up in a crepe, which of course is a super light, wrapper. It's just made out of milk and water, milk, water, flour, I guess, or egg.
Egg.
And then it's just like a really super thin pancake. Crepe is French for a pancake. And then you just roll it up in there. But if it's pasta, then it's a manicotti, and you can manicotti. There's no end to it. You can pretty much stuff it with anything that will fit in it.
Okay, so at the beginning of the week, you made meatloaf. And then the next meal, you took that meatloaf and you ground it up and you put it into a tomato sauce and made it into a bolognese. And now we're going to take that bolognese and we're going to make a third meal out of it. And you are going to stuff the manicotti with...
Yeah, we're just going to add some spinach and some ricotta cheese, which would be traditional, and stuff that inside. Now you want to... Well, if you're going to bake it for an hour, then you don't even have to blanch the pasta.
That was my question. Do you fill it? Because, how do you blanch something, that big round tube, and have it being floppy around? How do you fill it?
Yeah. Generous for me is just use grind. Everything is chopped up enough where you can pipe it to a pastry bag. So you just get a tube on it and pipe it to a pastry bag. But
you don't have to boil it if you're baking it?
Not if you're going to bake it for an hour. There's enough moisture in the dish. It's kind of like a lasagna. A lot of times people will cook their lasagna noodles ahead of time.
But you don't have to.
No, you don't have to, because they're going to be cooking in this liquid, and they're going to be cooking in there for an hour. Pasta only takes, 12 minutes to cook?
So whatever moisture is in your sauce is enough moisture to cook the pasta from a dry state.
Yes, it is. And, I didn't actually learn that until fairly well along in my career. I don't know, it's a couple of decades ago that I was someplace and I see him do that. I'm like, that's not going to get cooked. Well, it did. It cooked and it came out nice. So
did you cook that in like a 350, 400 degree oven?
Yeah, most things are going to be the average temperature is just 350 degrees for just about anything. If it's something, if you want to brown something or sear it, maybe it's a little higher. If you want to cook something like allow it to stew, then maybe you go down to 3 1/4.
When you take the spinach, so you had me pick up frozen spinach today.
Yes.
And are you going to drain that, defrost it? What's the technique for taking that meatloaf that you turn into a sauce, adding the spinach and the ricotta? How are you going to do that?
Well, you're going to find out when I get home.
They're not going to be here to watch you do it tomorrow.
So
you
want
to
tell people. Okay, so yes, we're going to drain spinach. Chopped spinach is one of the few vegetables that I think you can, work pretty well out of a freezer because it's a block and it's solid. But allow it to thaw overnight, let it drain, and then go ahead and mix it in with the ricotta. And I'm going to use a little bit of that sauce to flavor it. as well, and with that kind of a thick meatloaf, tomato sauce, and put a little sauce on top, a little mozzarella. I mean, I like mozzarella, Parmesan for flavor, things like Parmesan Romano, you know, Asiago, I guess. Those are great cheeses. But a lot of times what I look for is the melt. You know, or, and a lot of times actually they call it the pull. In pizza competitions they call it, you know, that the pull. Like when you pull that pizza and you see how long that cheese, that cheese strings out, and then, yeah, that's, well, it's, yeah, it's important. I can like your cheese, but manicotti, man meaning hand, cotti meaning coat. So it's, coated. It's, like a hand coated. Originated, of course, in Italy on this one. A lot of pasta came from originally from China, but this one came from Italy. And just basically like a tube. And, and the one we had at Pesce Pasta, we actually stuffed with crab also. It was a crab, spinach, sautéed mushroom, and a mixture mixed with the ricotta. And then it got a nice, I think you could get it with either a pesto sauce or a tomato sauce. But, yeah, it's a great, easy dish. It's not, I mean, it's, again, one of the things that, we need to, consider when we're cooking these days is as costs go up on things, we are, you know, we have less money to work with. You don't want, you want to utilize your leftovers. You know, if you can't, you know, if you got two slices of meatloaf left and you don't have anything to do with it, then, you know, you don't want to make a meatloaf sandwich or something out of it, then wrap it, freeze it, throw it in the freezer, label it, always label it, and then pull it out down the road and do something else with it. But we're not in a position where, you know, financially we can prepare more, have food going to waste. I mean, in a restaurant, it's a killer. It's one, you know, food going to waste in a restaurant is not a good thing.
Well, and in French cooking, it's all about total utilization of the product.
Well, total utilization of it, and again, just making sure nothing goes to waste. And even if you want to do something simple, like you've got your pasta and you've got some leftover pasta, just cool it down. And then just, you know, a little bit of olive oil when you want to heat it up, a little bit of garlic, that garlic just start to turn. Throw in your pasta. It's actually called aglio di olio. Aglio is just Italian for garlic, and olio is Italian for oil. So it's aglio e with the E and oil, garlic and oil. And I know that one of the ways that I did this at Pesce Pasta was with a Mizithra cheese. There's a chain, I don't know if they're still around. I think they are. They were called Spaghetti Factory. And they had this dish. It was just like aglio di olio, but they added this Mizithra cheese. And Mizithra is a sheep cheese. It's hard. It's got, you know, a salty component to it. It's almost kind of, I don't know, chalk-like, but it's so delicious.
Dry and nutty kind of flavor.
Yep. It's going to get you some nuttiness as well. Mizithra, it's a Mizithra. Mizithra. But yeah, it's a
don't spell that in a spelling competition.
Yeah, I don't think so. And really, when you start that off, you really want to use a brown butter for something like that. So it's where you put your butter in your pan and allow it to melt, and then you reduce the heat and allow it to start to brown, and you'll get a really nice nutty flavor and even nutty aroma out of it.
So Mizithra is not really a melting cheese. It's more of a garnish-type cheese.
Definitely not a melting cheese. No, it would be an ingredient. It'd be just, you know, one more component that would go in there. So it'd be a flavoring ingredient. It is something you put on top to allow it to melt. But it was just a great dish. It was simple. Brown butter, which gives a very distinctive flavor, and then you throw in your pasta, which has been pre-blanched, and, you know, and your garlic, and it's just something simple, you know. And, you know, being Italian, pasta, just, you know, they might say pasta's, you know, no good for you. I don't know, with the flour and all. I mean, I think that the flour these days, of course, for the most part, has zero nutritional value, and it's probably not even good for you with the things that they add into it. But get yourself a good flour. Get yourself a good flour from Italy. I know we use the Caputo when I make my pizza. I use the Caputo,
And a double O.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you get yourself a flower that has not been processed to death, right? Not something that's just been, you know, mistreated, and the whole idea was just to get longevity on the product, so they add in preservatives and byproducts and stuff. So start off with some good flower. Go out to Moore's Flower Mill. Yeah, out there on Airport Road. We'll be talking more about that down the road here, but Cooking Like a Pro, we'll be right back in a moment with our last segment. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.
In my beer, 'cause I'm crying for you, dear. You are on my lonely mind. Last night I walked the floor.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
Hey, this is Carl and Linda Bott. Looking for a staycay or a getaway close to home? Well, the best houseboat rentals are happening right now in September and October at Holiday Harbor.
And the off-season rates at Holiday Harbor are amazing deals. And the lake is a perfect 78 degrees. For more information, go to LakeShasta.com or call 530-238-2383.
Experience fall family fun at this year's Turtle Bay Oktoberfest, happening Saturday, October 12th from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. right here at Paul Bunyan Forest Camp. Enjoy local breweries, food, live music, animals, games, and more. Oktoberfest themed costumes are encouraged. Each ticket includes your first beer or root beer for the kids. Presented by Liquor Barn and Sasquatch Car Wash. So join us Saturday, October 12th from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. for Turtle Bay's Oktoberfest. Grab tickets today at turtlebay.org.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
I'm never satisfied. I want the friends
all right, welcome back. Welcome back. Thank you for sticking it out. Here we are, almost done with another show. Almost another show in the can. And you know, I wanted to bring something up quickly. I did an event last week. It was just a fundraising event. Well, actually, it wasn't so much a fundraising event. It was more of an event to help with Operation Christmas Child. And if you're unfamiliar with it, there was a variety of churches that were there. And what they do is they fill these shoe boxes full of toys, and they go, I mean, hundreds of thousands. They go all around the world. This is something that's done, you know, across the United States and a variety of places where they want to make sure that every kid on Christmas, regardless of whether you're in the Sudan or you're in Vietnam or wherever you happen to be, that they're going to get a Christmas present.
And we even include things like toothpaste, socks.
Yep. So many things. Essentials and again, just, you know, a gift. Think about it. You know, you're in a place where certainly there's no snow on the ground, but one of the things we did there, though, and I want to put a shout out to Christina, who just our engineer here, and she made some wonderful chocolate dip strawberries. Those are great. Those are great. Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
Appreciate your advertising and actually ordering them. It was a blessing to make them. And
yeah. So, if you're looking for a strawberry, you can reach out to the station, or you can reach out to us. We'll make sure to get you in contact. But she made a little shoebox out of chocolate and had it on each strawberry. And then the strawberry was dipped in chocolate and had some green drizzle and some white gold fleck on it and some
gold.
What was the gold on that was on there?
It was just a powder, gold powder. I like when it has like this gold blisket. It makes it like more tasty, richer.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful and lovely and tasty.
And tasty
those boxes. Yeah, the boxes look great. People, you know, especially with the event being with the box. So thank you to Christina for helping us be able to put that on. And we started with a tear in my beer, and the reason was is my wife just said, I want to talk about beer, which is strange.
Because I don't drink beer.
She doesn't drink beer, yeah. But, you know, beer is used a lot. It is used a lot in food. Something that I remember back, very, very fond of that in my earlier days where we used to beer batter. You know, it generally, just something like a beer batter, you're going to want that flavor. So you might use a particular highly flavored beer. A beer that has a lot of maybe hops in it or something that's going to come across. Because when you eat this nice golden brown deep fried cod or whatever the firm fish is that you're doing, you want a fish that's firm that can hold up to the temperature. Because remember, you always want to deep fry at 375. Do not deep fry at any other temperature. 375. Get yourself a candy thermometer. Put it on the edge of your deep fryer, your pot, and then just bring it up slowly and get it up to around 375 and just cook a little bit. Oh, I think it's a textural component. I mean, I like fish. I like the crispness of the batter. But, you know, fish and chips. I pretty much judge, if I go into a pub type of an atmosphere, I almost always get fish and chips. And I judge the place by their batter. And a beer batter is just, it's a simple batter. You know, a little bit of butter in there as well with the beer and the flour and some eggs.
Well, and I've used beer to make bread. As the liquid component.
Beer bread. Beer fondue is another one. You know, you can melt some cheese down, use some beer to kind of give it a little. So this, I mean, if you were, say you were doing like soft pretzels, you know, like the big giant plant, and you needed to dip it into something, and you're watching the game, and we're not the 49er game, at least not the one from last week. But, you know, then you have something to dip it into. So a nice soft pretzel baked off to dip into a beer fondue. And another thing is I always add beer to my barbecue sauce. Always. Now on something like that, I use a cheap beer, you know, inexpensive beer because I just want that beer flavor, right? And it's not going to really come through in a barbecue sauce with all that sugar that's in there. So I always kind of thin it out. You know, barbecue sauces are so thick that they're just going to kind of stick on there and, next thing you know, your grill's a mess. So,
well, what's different? It's interesting. Okay, so we talk about wine, and we've got white wine, uh-huh. and we've got red wine, and there's a gamut of, you know, low acidity and high acidity, and there's so many different things. But also in beer, there's light beers and there's dark beers. And whereas I like white wine, if I'm going to do a beer, I want a dark one, like a porter or a stout. I don't like the lighter beers.
Mm-hmm. You know, and someplace to go is go down and see our friends
Charlou.
Charlou and Kathy down at Charlou's down in the Anderson
tap wall.
Factory outlet. Yeah, because they got the tap wall, and you can just try 1 ounce. You know, you can just try a little bit to see before you get yourself a whole glass, and that's fun because you're trying more things. It's always fun.
Well, that's actually how I started drinking beer because I tasted each one and went, "Oh, I don't like that. Oh, wait, okay." So I'm finding out I like the darker beers.
Yeah. And they've got ales on there, which is kind of nice. And I know they've got that. I don't know what that chocolate brownie something. I can't remember.
That's the one I like.
Is that, was it chocolate brownie beer?
It's a port. I think it's stout.
A stout?
It might be a porter. I can't remember which one it is.
Something you can sip on. But
can you cook with a dark beer? You know, we used to put a lot of, what's the orange one? The moon one.
Oh, the Belgium.
Yeah, the white. Belgian. Yeah. So you use that one in a lot of cooking. Can you use a dark beer in cooking?
Yeah. Matter of fact, one of my favorite muffins is a Guinness Stout muffin.
Oh.
Now, Guinness Stout is going to be bitter, so you're going to have to make sure to balance the sugar, but it makes a great muffin. And again, it just depends on the flavor you want to get. I know that I make a beer cheddar soup, which is a really nice soup. You don't want, just like everything else, and in the second segment this evening, we talked about BLT because of the balance of flavor. Same thing. You know, if I have a sharp cheddar and beer soup, I want to be able to, I don't want the beer to overpower the cheddar or vice versa. So the balance of ingredients, the balance of the flavor, taste it. You know, always have your tasting spoons, those, you know, ready to go. But you know, beer is something that we cook a lot with.
Okay, now something else I remember. When you used to do the fish and chips, you would come out and get off tap the beer fresh to make your beer batter with. You would not let your beer sit there for an hour on the counter. You would come out and do it fresh right before you were going to dip it and throw it in the fryer.
Yeah, just the more carbonation that's in there, you know, the lighter the batter is going to be. Yeah, and again, it doesn't really matter what you're deep frying, shrimp or cod or anything else, you know, chicken nuggets, you know, those kind of things. Well, you get into that, actually. Normally that would be something that we would say is breaded, you know, not so much.
So is there any use for a flat beer?
A flat beer? Yeah. I mean, a flat beer you could use certainly in your soup. You know, it'd be great in soup because if I'm making, you know, 5 gallons of beer cheddar soup, I'm going to need a gallon of beer. So that would work too. But remember, beer is not meant to lay down. Lay down meaning, you know, give it a break, you know, let it just kind of hang out and get better because it's not going to get better. Beer is made, beer is cooking. You know, you do cook beer. That's the process of making beer. Includes cooking it with the ingredients, and that's just, you know, something that you're making. You cool it down, but it's made for quick consumption. When you look at wines, most wines are made for fairly quick consumption. They're made ready, you know, to enjoy. Again, some things aren't. You know, you can get, you know, of course, certain. You know, red wines. Generally, it's a red wine that can lay down, and it's something that's a little bit heavier or something where the grapes are a little more complex, like maybe a Syrah, Cabernet, of course, Zinfandel, especially from Paso Robles. You can get a Turley, yeah, it'll bring a tear to your eye. So get yourself a Turley. I mean, you'll get a little tear in your eye. Or a William Salem.
I have a little of a weird question. Okay, if you're cooking with beer, are you going to serve wine at your meal? I mean, do the two play nice, or should you just have a wine-directed dinner or a beer-directed dinner?
Well, I think that, you know, when it comes to the idea of matching flavors, then the whole idea would be to, you know, if I'm going to have a beer dinner, which we did, you know, countless, you know, numerous beer dinners in the past. I'd have everything from, you know, maybe a beer battered here, and then, you know, maybe a beer cheddar soup, and I mean, you could even have a beer ice cream. I mean, you know, a beer ice cream, of course, would be, you know, where you'd reduce the beer down and just get that essence of the beer, and then add that to, basically, it's just a custard. It's just a French custard, and then you freeze it. You know, it's pretty simple to make ice cream. But, you know, that would be something where we just want to kind of really, show off, you know, the product of beer. I know that we did an event with our Olympic team over in, Arcata with, now I'm not forgetting the name of I won't say Aetna, maybe, but it's just an amazing beer. It's a wonderful gentleman that owned it, and we did an event here, a beer tasting here. Then the next day we did the same beer tasting over there. It was a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I mean, again, it's all about, you know, matching foods, pairing them up, then coming up with a flavor balance that's going to work, and, you know, just practice, play around. I mean, you know, that's where I think most of my, you know, ideas that have been the most successful have certainly come from just trying things. Try that. Does it work? No, it didn't work this time. Oh, hey, I like that. That worked. So, you know, you've got, you know, but again, you don't know if you don't try, you know, and, you know, beer is one of those things that I think probably the beer batter would be the better way to
go. And if it doesn't work out, you can just go cry in your beer.
If it doesn't, then you can do the Hank Williams thing, and the next thing you know, you got a tear in your beer. So, but anyway, what I want to mention just quickly, I forgot to mention that spring mix that you got. It was a mixture of green leaf and red leaf. I thought that was kind of cool. Where'd you get that at?
Okay, so today I stopped by Winco, and at the end of the where they usually have the butter lettuce and they have the fresh growing ones, they had a spring mix style of three different lettuces growing out of the same little root ball.
Yeah, it looked like kind of like when you get the butter lettuce.
Yeah.
It looks like that.
So I'm excited to try that. I haven't tried it yet.
So we'll try that. Maybe we'll talk about that next week. But again, we always appreciate you tuning in to Cooking Like a Pro with Chef Cal and my wife, Mrs. Chef Krista. We will have a wonderful week, a great weekend, and we look forward to talking to you next Wednesday here at KCNR, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM.